The following is a Gita Jayanti lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 18, text number 78. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari. Recorded on December 24th, 2012, in Sydney, Australia.
So, this evening on this most auspicious occasion, we're going to read Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text number 78, the final verse of the Bhagavad Gita, which really sums it all up very nicely. You can repeat after me to invoke auspiciousness in the atmosphere. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna.
Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna.
Yatra Partor Dandur Dadaha.
Yatra Partor Dandur Dadaha.
Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir.
Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir.
Dhruvani Tirmatir Mama.
Dhruvani Tirmatir Mama.
Yatra. Where? Yoga Ishvaraha,
Yoga Ishvaraha,
the master of mysticism,
mysticism.
Krishna,
Krishna,
Lord Krishna,
Lord Krishna.
Yatra,
Yatra,
where? Partha, the son of Pritha, Dhanudhara, the carrier of the bow and arrow, Tatra. There, Shri Opulence, Vijaya, Victory, Bhuti, Exceptional Power, Dhruva, Certain, Niti, Morality, Mati, Mama, My Opinion. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power and morality. That is my opinion. Purport. The Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra's. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You were thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. Krishna's acceptance of the post of the charioteer for Arjuna was an exhibition of another opulence. Krishna is full of all opulences, and renunciation is one of them. There are many instances of such renunciation, for Krishna is also the master of renunciation. The fight was actually between Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. Arjuna was fighting on behalf of his elder brother Yudhishthira. Because Krishna and Arjuna were on the side of Yudhishthira, Yudhishthira's victory was certain. The battle was to decide who would rule the world, and Sanjaya predicted that the power would be transferred to Yudhisthira. It is also predicted here that Yudhisthira, after gaining victory in this battle, would flourish more and more, because not only was he righteous and pious, but he was also a strict moralist. He never spoke a lie during his life. There are many less intelligent persons who take Bhagavad Gita to be a discussion of topics between two friends on a battlefield, but such a book cannot be scripture. Some may protest that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight, which is immoral. But the reality of the situation is clearly stated. Bhagavad Gita is the supreme instruction in morality. The supreme instruction of morality is stated in the 9th chapter in the 34th verse, Manmana Mamamad Bhakta. One must become a devotee of Krishna. And the essence of all religion is to surrender to Krishna sarvadharman paritjaja mamekang sharanang viraja. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita constitute the supreme process of religion and of morality. All other processes may be purifying and may lead to this process, but the last instruction of the Gita is the last word in all morality and religion: surrender unto Krishna. This is the verdict of the 18th chapter. From Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that to realize oneself by philosophical speculation and meditation is one process, but to fully surrender unto Krishna is the highest perfection. This is the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. The path of regulative principles according to the orders of social life and according to the different courses of religion may be a confidential path of knowledge, but although the rituals of religion are confidential, meditation and cultivation of knowledge are still more confidential, and surrender unto Krishna in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential instruction. This is the essence of the 18th chapter. Another feature of the Bhagavad Gita is that the actual truth is the supreme personality of Godhead Krishna. The absolute truth is realized in three features, namely impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and ultimately the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. Perfect knowledge of the absolute truth means perfect knowledge of Krishna. If one understands Krishna, then all the departments of knowledge are part and parcel of that understanding. Krishna is transcendental, for he is always situated in his eternal, internal potency. The living entities are manifested of his energy and are divided into two classes, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. Such living entities are innumerable, and they are considered fundamental parts of Krishna. Material energy is manifested into 24 divisions. The creation is affected by eternal time, and it is created and dissolved by external energy. This manifestation of the cosmic world repeatedly becomes visible and invisible. In Bhagavad Gita, five principal subject matters have been discussed: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature, the living entities, eternal time, and all kinds of activities. All is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All conceptions of the absolute truth, impersonalized Brahman, localized Paramatma, and any other transcendental conception exist within the category of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entity, material nature, and time appear to be different. Nothing is different from the Supreme. But the Supreme is always different from everything. Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is that of inconceivable oneness and difference. This system of philosophy constitutes perfect knowledge of the Absolute Truth. The living entity in his original position is pure spirit. He is just like an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Thus, Lord Krishna may be compared to the sun and the living entities to the sunshine. Because the living entities are the marginal energy of Krishna, they have a tendency to be in contact either with the material energy or with the spiritual energy. In other words, the living entity is situated between the two energies of the Lord, and because he belongs to the superior energy of the Lord, he has a particle of independence. By proper use of that independence, he comes under the direct order of Krishna. Thus, he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta reports to the 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of its conclusion, the perfection of renunciation. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Badijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shivishakam Vidamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtanjade Shatarine. So there's two conditions described here by Srila Prabhupada. There's the condition of being within the spiritual energy of the Lord, the superior energy, or the condition of being in the material energy, the inferior energy. What is the difference between being situated in the spiritual energy and the material energy? Prabhupada describes here the spiritual energy is the normal condition, and it is the pleasure-giving potency. Therefore, the material energy is an abnormal condition, and it is a misery-giving potency. So, we really all have the choice. Do you want to be in the misery-giving potency, or would you like to live in the pleasure-giving potency? You see, it's your choice. Do you like pleasure better, or do you like misery better? Yeah, yes, that's right. We all like to be, because our actual nature is spiritual, therefore we actually desire pleasure. That's our constitutional position. Somehow we have gotten, dislocated or improperly located here in a place of misery. This material world may appear to be, you know, travel agencies, you know, they advertise every place in the world is wonderful and beautiful. Just go to Sydney and you'll be happy. You can see the Opera House, or just go to you can see the Grand Canyon. You know, every place is advertised as a wonderful tourist spot. Even Antarctica is being advertised as a wonderful tourist spot. You see, resist ice and snow, nothing else. But this is hype, actually. The fact is, in this material world, I don't care where you're situated, Bhagavad Gita actually states, Krishna says, even if you're on the topmost planet, the heavenly region, the highest planet in this whole material world is the abode of Lord Brahma, and even Lord Brahma has to suffer, you see. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text number 16. Ah, Brahma Bhavana Loka Punaravartinarjana. Manupechita Konteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. From the highest planet in this material world all the way down to the very, very bottom, the lowest planet, every place you have to suffer. So, my dear ladies and gentlemen, we're not at home right now. You may feel very at home. Well, this is my hometown now. I've adopted Sydney as my hometown. We may feel very at home, but actually this is not our home. Our actual home is the spiritual sky. We are originally inhabitants of the spiritual sky. Somehow we got sidetracked. Somewhere down the line we got sidetracked. We ended up here in this cycle of birth and death. But this is not our actual position. The great sages of India have been saying this for thousands of years. And if we listen to them, if we understand their message, then we can become liberated souls. Jivan Mukta. Liberated souls. Now you may say, well, come on now. I'm not prepared to be a sannyasi. Don't give me all this stuff. I'm not ready to be a... We're not saying that. Bhagavad Gita is saying you stay in your present position. Whatever you are, student, professional, housewife, businessman, politician, whatever you may be, you remain in your position, you see. Just as Arjuna remained, actually Arjuna wanted to give up his position. We just read how Arjuna wanted to give up his position, but Krishna said, no, you stay in your position and you do it with love for me. You understand? So whatever position you're in, that's no problem. By your karma, you have a certain position. We all have a certain position according to the laws of karma. So whatever your position is, you simply use that position in the service of the Lord, you see. And develop your love for Him. Regularly chant His names, offer your food to Him. All the instructions are given here in Gita. If you will simply follow Bhagavad Gita, read every day, read some Gita, at least one verse, and try to follow these teachings, you will find that all the anxieties of life go away. As confirmed in this verse. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power and morality. Would you like to have opulence in your house? Sure, we'd all love to have opulence in our house. How about victory? Sure. How about extraordinary power? Sure, we love it. How about morality? Of course, we'd all like to have morality in our family members, you see. All of these things will be yours. Opulence, victory, extraordinary power and morality if you will just make Krishna the center of your home. It's all you have to do. Make Krishna the center. Not my ego or your ego or the kid's ego. You see? Put Krishna in the center. Make a nice altar for Krishna. And everyone bows down to Krishna every day. You offer all your food to Krishna. It's all you have to do. You're going to eat anyway. You're going to cook anyway. Why not take a couple of minutes to make a nice plate for Krishna? You see? It's not difficult. It's called an attitude of gratitude. That's all we're saying. Stay in your present position, but simply develop an attitude of gratitude. Gratitudinousness, I think is the word. Gratitudinousness, yeah. And simply to have this attitude of gratitude. And if you do so, I guarantee you, magic will happen in your life. Magic will happen. All those things that cause you anxiety, those anxieties will evaporate. If you have that attitude of gratitude, you will see how Krishna is blessing you at every minute with His love. You'll see how the hand of Krishna is acting at every day, at every minute in your life. You will never feel lonely. You will never feel unprotected. You'll never be afraid. You'll never be confused. You'll never be bewildered at any step in your life, even at the moment of death. And all you have to do is remember Krishna. Try to always remember Him, to hear about Him, to glorify Him. And what's the vehicle for doing that? Bhagavad Gita. And when you want, and when you've read this, we have other books too. You can go a little deeper. This is the BA level, bachelor's degree. And we have the master's degree level also, the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have those classes every morning here. In fact, tomorrow morning at 7:30, I'll be giving a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. You're invited to come. It simply goes a little bit deeper. You see, the Bhagavad Gita is the word spoken by Krishna. And the Bhagavatam is the word spoken about Krishna by his pure devotees. And then when you go even a little deeper, the PhD level, then you get to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We have all these books available. But the first thing is you must master the Bhagavad Gita. Read it every day, at least one verse. Try to follow it. Try to understand it. You can inquire from the devotees. If something is not clear, we have devotees here. We have who are trained in this philosophy, who are trained in this practice. Inquire from the devotees here. If something is not clear to you, why this, why that, develop a clear understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. And by doing that, your life will become sublime. So does anybody have any questions? Yeah.
And you said by following the Gita, our life will be free from anxiety. Mm. But we notice that devotees also have problems.
Don't devotees have problems also? Those actually, we see the example of the great devotee, one of the greatest devotees in history, Kunti Devi. She had, how many problems she had? I mean, my goodness. Here's a woman who grew up in the palace life, you see, in the royal family. And now she has to live in exile, living in the forest. I mean, talk about anxiety. They were, you know, Duryodhana was trying to kill her and her sons. I mean, it was very heavy. There was man-eating monsters of the palace of I mean, talk about anxieties that Kunti Devi had to go through, even though she's a devotee. You know what happened at the end when after the war was over and now she's back in the palace and all the anxieties are gone? And Krishna was there spending some time with them after the when you're finished, then I'll continue. I don't want to interrupt you. So after the whole intrigue was finished and the Pandavas were reestablished, Yudhisthira was reestablished, she was and Krishna was getting ready to leave for Dwarka to leave them alone. She was saying, actually, Krishna, please give me more of these anxieties. Because my experience was, when I was going through all of these anxieties in the state of exile, I was completely taking shelter of you at every minute. And because of that taking shelter of you, I was always feeling your divine presence with me. And actually, I was liberated in that condition of anxiety. But now that you're going away and we don't have any anxieties, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my Krishna consciousness. So please give me some more anxieties, Lord. Vipadasham tutasya svatatra tatra jagadguru bhavanam darshanam yashad apunarbhava darshanam. She said, may those calamities become again and again and again. Because when I'm in a state of being tortured by calamity, I can do nothing but take shelter of you, and when I'm seeing you, I know that I'm liberated from birth and death. So when one is actually fixed in Krishna consciousness, he takes every tribulation as a benediction. So for him, there's no such thing as a tribulation, really, you see. He sees how the merciful hand of Krishna is acting in every minute. In the times of celebration, in times of defeat, every single duality of this material world, he experienced, this is true oneness. It's called equanimity, samaha in Sanskrit. He sees victory, defeat, happiness, distress, beautiful and ugly, honor and dishonor is the same. because he sees how Krishna is acting and blessing him in every situation. Such a person does not have anxiety. He becomes more blissful when there's no anxiety and more blissful when there is anxiety. He's just like a businessman, a really shrewd businessman, you see. It doesn't matter what's going on with the market. When prices go up, he sells. When prices go down, he buys. No matter what the market can be, an up market, a down market, but his business is always expanding. A shrewd businessman is not deterred. He knows how to profit on every kind of market situation. So a devotee, you see, one who is actually fixed in Krishna consciousness, he knows how to springboard off of every single situation to become more and more Krishna conscious. The so-called non-anxiety situations and the so-called anxiety situations. I say so-called because for the devotee who is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, they are all the same. There's no difference. And Kunti was saying, actually, I like the anxiety situations better. I find that easier to be Krishna conscious when I'm in anxiety. So please give me more and more anxieties. And the advanced devotees, they voluntarily assume anxieties because they find that helps them to become more blissful. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he's a completely liberated soul. He has no anxieties, but he says, my dear Lord, I have one anxiety, and that is how to free all these people in this material world from their anxieties. Actually, we saw this example in our Dallas temple many years ago. In those days, nobody lived outside. They all lived in the temple. And we had about 80 devotees. And there was a sannyasi managing 80 devotees living together. We had a number of buildings, but we were all under one economy. We, you know, the treasury. If you needed diapers, you'd go to the treasury, you know, for your kid. I mean, it was quite the old days, the old style, you know. Old style of his kind. So here was a sannyasi managing a community with householders, brahmacharis, sannyasis, little kids, managing the whole thing. And it was really a tremendous managerial headache in one sense. So I remember our GVC came, he visited the temple, and he said that, because he is taking on all of your problems, he has no problem. You see? So the point is, a Vaishnava, he takes the anxiety, the burden of delivering every single living entity in this material world back to Krishna. He voluntarily, with great jubilation, with exhilaration, he ecstatically embraces the deliverance of every single conditioned soul in this material world back to Krishna. He takes the problems of every single jiva soul upon himself as his burden of love. Someone may say, well, who wants a burden of love? I mean, you know. Now, I ask all the parents of here, is it sometimes a burden to take care of your kids? Sure it is. But it's called a burden of love. If I said, here, I'll just kidnap your child so you won't have to bother changing diapers anymore. Or, no. Don't take my child, you see. Or a millionaire, you see. Or let's say a billionaire. It's such a headache managing $1 billion. I mean, because people are trying to steal it, the government's trying to get it, the creditors are trying to get it, you have thieves, your employees are maybe trying to steal some of the money. It's a great headache to be a billionaire. So my dear billionaire, I know it's a headache for you to manage your $1 billion, so tell you what, just give it all to me and I will leave you your burden. No. So it's called burden of love, you see. For a parent or for a rich man, their children and their material assets, they are burdens, but they are burdens of love. They would never give them up. So for a devotee of the Lord, the anxieties of this material existence, the anxieties of this material world that he's trying to alleviate by his example and by his preaching, it's a burden of love. He's a burden of love. The devotee even thinks that I can take birth after birth after birth for the sake of delivering these fallen souls. He doesn't even think, I have to get out of here as soon as I can just to be back in Goloka. He doesn't even think that. He's thinking, I can take birth after birth here. Because it's so relishable to voluntarily take on all this anxiety on behalf of Krishna. It's so relishable. So, in this way, a devotee deals with anxiety and our time has run out. We are a real quick one? Okay. What if you're not ready to, you know, take up this mood of embracing the anxieties of all the living entities? So then, how do you deal with your own anxieties in everyday life? Well, one thing is whatever anxiety comes, you have to see you're actually burning off your past sinful reactions. It's stated like that. Tate nukambam sushamik shavano bunjana evatmarkatam vapakam. My dear Lord, those devotees who are always waiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them while they undergo the anxiety of burning off their previous sinful reactions, but constantly offer you respectful obeisances within the cores of their hearts, are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So yeah, we do have so many anxieties, but we see that Krishna is actually kindly relieving us from our past sins, and in spite of those anxieties, we keep offering our obeisances to Krishna in that mood, that attitude of gratitude, even for the anxieties. One is already a liberated soul. That liberates one from the being consumed or overwhelmed by the anxieties. One has to see them through the eyes of the scripture as the gradual relief. Just like if you're sick, you have to take some bitter medicine. But you don't mind because you know you're getting well. So the devotee takes the anxieties as the bitter medicine to get over his previous sins in this way. If I'm sick, I have to take some bitter medicine. I don't mind because I know I'm getting well by taking this bitter medicine. So Vodhi doesn't mind the anxieties. They go, this is Krishna's mercy. Bring you to the point to be free of all anxieties. It's suffering, anxiety, to become free of anxiety. But if you don't take the Krishna consciousness, your anxieties will never go away. They'll simply go on and on and on, birth after birth after birth. But for devotee, whatever anxieties he have, it's like the goodbye, farewell anxiety party. He's wrapping up all of his anxieties so they will never torture him ever again. So that's maybe that gives some solace. All right, so we're going a little bit over time. Should we stop? I think we're stopping at 7, right? Okay. So we thank you all very, very much for coming here to worship Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Now please, a new year is coming. Please resolve to make Bhagavad Gita your life and soul. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Jai. Jai.